Hi, everybody. My name's Pat. I'm an alcoholic. And thanks to Bob, who's not here, for calling and inviting me to come over. I'm in the Palm Springs area and seemed like a good idea at the time. And thanks to Kevin for picking me up and shuffling me around here and being a great host. Thank you. And when I walked out the door, my husband said, "There she goes to stomp out alcoholism in Las Vegas." You know, it's like, okay, what an order. I can't go through with it. Jesus. Good luck. But I love to put back in Alcoholics Anonymous is the way I look at it, because I have taken so much, and I'll tell you. And I liked that when I was new. They said, "Don't you worry about a thing. Just take and take and take. Take all you can, as long as you can, want and whatnot. It's here for the taking and whatnot." And thank God there were a lot of people who'd been sober a while to give it to give it to us sick newcomers and whatnot and help us along. But they said the day'll come, you gotta put something back in the bank, you know, and like all of us, it's like, I don't want to stand up at a podium, or God forbid I go out of my way, you know, or it's not convenient for me, all that stuff. But somewhere in there, as I got better and I got to love this program, it changed. It all changed. And now it's like, I like putting back. I like helping others. And I'll tell you, it was not like that in the beginning. I remember I was in a group much like this, very active, a lot of doing stuff. They were forever helping somebody, you know, whether they're moving or cleaning or some project. And I think, God damn it, I would have joined the Salvation Army if I wanted to help others. You know, it was like, or I'd just go, "Here's $20. That was always my thing. It's just pay them off, you know. And they're going, "Well, we're all going to go do some." So I go, "Here's $20. You know, it's just like, oh. So they nicknamed me Lady Bountiful. And my group, we all had nicknames. "There she goes, Lady Bountiful strikes again," you know. And we were having a potluck. And I didn't do potlucks. I mean, come on, you know. A swinger like myself, we weren't into potlucks. And I go, potluck? You know, you are kidding me. And again, "Here's $20. I think that was a big potluck, so I sent over this big expensive cheese platter. You know, I've always wanted to make a splash with something, you know. And they go, "Lady Bountiful strikes again," you know. And they made such fun of me and all that. And I just couldn't believe it. I mean, I thought, I remember when I got here off of a very bad car wreck. I hurt some people. It was just a disaster, and yet there I am, and I called AA. I was drunk out of my mind. I passed out, missed my 12-step call, and when I came to, I remembered, and I'm a big blackout drinker, but I remembered, and I went, "Oh, my God, I've called Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, how low can you go?" You know, and it was the first step up I had made in years, but my sick head told me that. And you know what? I always believed that head. It's the only thing I had. And I'll tell you, I thank God those wonderful fanatical ANAers around here, because even though I didn't answer the door when they came to 12-step me, but that didn't stop them. They kept at it, you know. They called again, and that's how they got me. And boy, did that change. And over the years, I think, how come I was lucky enough not only to get this and to get here, but to stay here? I'm 32 years sober. My father died drunk. My brother died drunk. They all had a shot at Alcoholics Anonymous. But how come I'm the one that got to stay here? I don't know. So I think try to just keep doing the things we do so that I get to stay here. So I was born 65 years ago. I'm so excited. I'm the only one excited to be 65. Like, yay, Medicare. Woo! It's like, I think it's really exciting. I mean, I'll tell you. And I five kids born in Chicago. And, you know, I don't remember much about my childhood at all. And to this day, I don't know if it's, you know, alcoholic brain damage. Or I like to think I was so self-centered that... that, you know, I'm one of those tunnel visions. If it doesn't have to do with me, I'm not interested. And so it's like, I guess there was a lot of chaos going on around, but I don't remember it. I don't care. I didn't see it. I don't know. So I just started drinking when I was 14, and I'll tell you right from the beginning, I was off to the races. I loved alcohol. every chance I could. And by the time I was 16, I forged my ID, and I found a bar near school. And this woman said, "Honey, you got a good fake ID. That's all I care about." Well, I made my own. It was just dynamite. And I had my little Catholic school uniform on. And after school, you know, they went to the malt shop, and I went to the bar. And that was it. And from there, I'd been a good little Catholic girl. I mean, all the little processions, all the stuff. I mean, I was kind of a rule follower, a little goody-two-shoes and whatnot. But I'll tell you, once I took that alcohol, bye, Mom, see you later, going to church. Never saw church after that, you know. Went right to the bar on Sunday, went right to the bar. I just was so obsessed and started just drinking my brains out. And I was always, like, so uptight. Like I said, I follow little rules. And, you know, I laughed. Did you ever watch that Monk show, you know, that crazy? I hate to tell you, but I identify with this guy a little. You know, it's like he's so anal and so, and that's kind of who I was. And I'll tell you, I took a drink and woohoo, boy, freedom, free at last, Lord, free at last. You know, it was great for being so uptight all the time. I was just so uptight. And I'll tell you, I just started and it was wonderful. And I remember, like, I just didn't care. I mean, I drove everybody home. I blacked out a lot, but I was like the dependable one, and I had a big capacity. And I remember one night, though, going down the street, and I was a little off, and I just hit every car. You know, whoo, whoo. It's like, I didn't mean to. You know, I just couldn't quite get back on the right track. And I took out every single car going down that street, you know, and I thought it was hysterical. Whereas, you know, and whatnot. Do you believe, you know, there I am sober a few years and someone did that to me. I came out in the morning and went, "Can you imagine such a thing?" I'm like, "Oh, give it a rest, Pat. Yes, I can imagine such a thing, you know." And so payback time. So, but anyway, that's just who I was. And by the time I was 21 years old, I was known for my drinking, and some guy gave me one of those magazines or newspapers with the headlines, and it says, "Pat, you finally made it. Now AA awaits you." Ooh. And I didn't get here till I was 32 years old. And I'll tell you, but even then, it was just like known for it. I came out to California when I was 22 years old, and I found out later. Well, let me back up. I was going to say my mother kind of pushed me out here, hoping that it would help my drinking. Now, I had no idea. I had no idea I had a drinking problem for many years to follow, too. But when I was 18, a big family fight. My mom and dad, they never fought. And I go downstairs, and my father is so drunk. I can't even believe it. And my mother's hysterical, and I'm going, "For God's sakes, I heard he hadn't drank for 10 years. You know, give him a break." So he got a little shit-faced, you know, like, leave him alone. So it was that thing. And so what happened is I had no idea that he was a terrible, terrible alcoholic, that he would disappear. He was a periodic, and when he drank, he would disappear. And she was home peeling, or would get a job peeling potatoes in the hospital for 25 cents an hour, pregnant with a third kid, you know, wondering what happened to dear old dad and if he's coming home and all that. She had horrible, horrible memories and stories of that. And he had gotten sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And but what happened was bad breaks. You know, life happens. And some unfortunate thing happened in his business, and he was forced out of business, and he was like crazy. He had worked so hard to build it up, you know, coming from where he did, five kids at home. I mean, anybody would be upset, fearful, kids at home, what am I going to do, how will I get out of this debt, da-da-da. And so the doctor gave him some lightweight tranquilizers to get through a tough time. I like to think that maybe in the 50s they didn't have the experience that we do now, that drugs kill alcoholics, you know, one way or the other. We've seen it so, so many times. But I don't think they knew that then. So he took some lightweight tranquilizers, which got heavier and heavier and heavier until finally he started drinking again. And for a whole year, you know, I thought they were business friends, guys from AA, just in and out of our house constantly trying to get dad back. But at 45 years old, he put a plastic bag over his head and killed himself and whatnot. And he just couldn't make it back. And I'll tell you, and needless to say, I've wrestled with that, or I go around it. And, you know, and I'm so grateful today. You know, he left me such a good thing. Like, I never did drugs. I mean, I tried to do drugs. I feel like I should apologize in some meetings. Like, everybody did drugs. I didn't do them. And I tried. I mean, I took some speed once. I thought I was going to have a goddamn heart attack. I thought, what is fun about this, you know? It was awful. And then I smoked marijuana a few times, and every time of course, I'm always drinking, and I smoked marijuana, and I would fall down. My legs, like, turned to rubber, and, I mean, I fell down a lot drunk, too, but usually you're in a blackout, and you don't remember, and who cares? Your knees are a little scabbed in the morning, but big deal, you know, it's that thing where... But it was so humiliating and whatnot. And, I mean, just no matter, I just tried it. I didn't try that much, but it was bad. They were all bad experiences, so I didn't. So here I am in sobriety, and I hit some walls, needless to say, over time. Life happens. And this keen brain says, you didn't have a pill problem. You could take pills. You didn't have any problems with pills. You never did drugs. I'd be fine doing that. And I'm so grateful I have my dad's experience, because he never did pills either. And yet it was just one of those times that one more time people like us turn to drugs and alcohol for a solution to our problems, and it just doesn't work. So I'm just grateful. And the other thing I always think of is my dad had two shots at Alcoholics Anonymous, and he couldn't seem to hang on to it. And so I always think of... This is my second. I drank it 7 months, and I was lucky enough to get back. And sometimes I think this may be the only chance I'll ever have, and I try to take really good care of it. So again, I'm so grateful to Dad for that and whatnot. So anyway, by the time I was 22, I'm out to California, and I am just like, holy moly. I don't know if any of you were around Manhattan, Hermosa Beach, like 30 years ago, but woohoo, that place rocked. And I mean, what? Here you are in your bikini on the strand, drunk as a skunk, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. You know, it was just like hysterical. I loved it. I closed those bars every single night. It was just absolutely wonderful. And I had to be at work, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. I was a little tired, but we manage, God forbid. And this guy always picked me up, 5:30 in the morning. He honks, you know, and God, I was always in bed, never ready. I mean, he'd get so mad at me. So finally, I said, okay, you know, when I get home about 2:15, I'll jump in the tub, and, you know, and in that way when he comes, you know, you just throw your clothes on, get your Visine out, a little makeup, and off you go. And I'll tell you, I would get in that bathtub, and the horn would honk. I'm still in the bathtub, 5:30 in the morning. Hours later, there I am, still in the bathtub. I would just get in that tub and pass out, I don't know, I want to say dozens, hundreds, I don't know. I mean, it's amazing. My skin isn't just, you know, totally just like dry. I just spent far too long in that bathtub, let me put it that way. And my roommate would just be having a fit. You're going to die in there. I know you are. She would just freak out. And it was one of those big old tubs. I said, would you stop? I've gone under lots of times. You just choke, it wakes you right up. You know, it's like, it's like everybody's like having a problem with my drinking, you know? And it was like, this is not a problem. I mean, everything was still a joke. And that was the first time that I know of that someone mentioned my drinking to me, this guy. I get in the car one morning, and he just looks at me and goes, what happened to you? And I'm hysterical. I don't know, I don't remember nothing after midnight. You know, I mean, years later, boy, did that turn on me. I was afraid to find out what happened, nor did I ever ask. But at that time, it was all a big joke. And he said, that's a sign of alcoholism. And I clearly remember him saying that, but I don't remember it ever registering, going any farther, nothing. I didn't even know that much about my dad, you know, at that time. I found out more about my dad when I got sober, really. So anyway, I met this guy. Oh, you know, one of those fabulous drunken romances. You're engaged in 7 days, you know. And we were going to go to Vegas and get married the next weekend. And, oh, it was just wonderful. And he was like the man of my dreams. He drank more than me and had money for both of us. I thought, my man, he's finally arrived. And so, anyway, he postponed the wedding 1 weekend at a time for 2 years until... It's like, duh, you know, until finally he said, I will never marry you because of your drinking, ever. And I mean, to this day, I don't think I've ever been so blown away. But see, I am such a blamer. Always. My drinking. Yours is far worse. And remember the time, da-da-da, da-da-da. And from then, I started just going wild. I'll tell you, my drinking just took a sudden... whatever. And I started doing, you know, that thing with the line, I'll never cross that line. Well, guess what? I crossed it many a time. So I had to keep pushing that line back and whatnot. And until finally I went back to Chicago. I thought, look what California's done to me. I was such a nice gal when I first came out. They are all crazy out here, and I am going back to Chicago. And I did. And I mean, there were some humiliating things that forced that decision. But I'm not going to admit that or look at that or even think about it. I'm a blamer, and I always, my favorite thing was, have a drink and don't think about it. It just upsets you. And then I find someone to blame, and I'm off. And I only stayed in Chicago briefly, and my mother told me in sobriety, if I hadn't left when I did, she would have asked me to, that it was like they walked around on pins and needles. And the minute she was such a sweet little lady would say, honey, why don't you just try not to drink tonight? I'd just rip her head off. And one night I told her off so viciously at work. I had been missing a couple days. You know how that goes. You just get missing. You know, you don't mean to be missed, but you just don't come home for a few days. And then the boss didn't come home for a few days, and she's calling work, and then people put two and two together, and it got very tacky, and the big gossip at work. And I just accused her of ruining my reputation, you know. I mean, I didn't know till I did my fourth step that I ruined my own reputation, but I'll tell you, I blamed her big time and told her off so viciously, screaming on the phone. She was afraid to come in her own house that night because she didn't know what I would do. Something started changing bad. I went off to New York after that, and I thought, this time it's going to be different, and it is, and I'll tell you, it was the worst 3 years of my drinking ever. And it's funny because my husband, when I was married when I was 2 years sober in this program, we just celebrated our 30-year wedding anniversary, and we were going off on our honeymoon, and he wanted, we were stopping in New York, or a plane change in New York, and he said, let's spend a few days in New York. And I went, oh, no, I can't, you know. Now, the big book promises you'll be a free person wherever you go if you work these steps. But obviously, I wasn't fearless and thorough, and I could not go into New York. I mean, I don't care. 10 million people there, and I was afraid I'd see someone I knew. You know, it was like, oh, no. And he said, don't worry. No one will recognize you in an upright position anyway. What are you worried about? Got to be very careful what you tell these guys. You know what I mean? Anyway, I had a moment of clarity in New York. That was my first moment of clarity, that I couldn't find the booze in my apartment, and I always had lots of it. I don't know if I was in the wrong apartment, wrong wall, wrong, I don't know. I was hysterical. 3, 4 in the morning, couldn't get any more. I was like a crazy person. And all of a sudden, all these things that I can't stand to think about, these humiliating, embarrassing, awful things that you just... I will not look at ever. And the next morning, I'll tell you, I had that thing of like, I've got a drinking problem, you know. I used to like say, I'm becoming an alcoholic. I'm becoming a tramp. I'd been both those for years, but it was like, finally, it's like, I'm in that stage now, but at least it's there a little bit, you know. And I said, starting tomorrow, I'm not going to drink so much. See, I never tried. I never knew that was a problem. I knew I got drunk now and then, but I never knew that was alcohol was the problem until that day. And so I'm real strong-willed in so many other areas. I can do whatever I make my mind up. And why so? I never thought I couldn't do it with alcohol. But I'll tell you, my next about 4 or 5 years after that, where everything I could do to control and enjoy my drinking, and it just got worse, 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 and whatnot. Finally, another one of those humiliating things. I'm at this bar. You know how you hear in AA, oh, I sought out lower companions. Not me. I go to the classiest bar on Wall Street and just sit there and make a total idiot out of myself, sobbing at the bar. Did you ever see that? A drunken woman just sobbing at the bar. That was me, perhaps. And my husband, for those of you that are older, said I probably looked like Tammy Faye Baker on a bad day. You know, it was just like mascara's running down. And this guy comes up to me one day and said, I don't care what they say about you, I like you. Thanks for sharing. Ooh, that hurt. And I walked in the next day, quit my job. I'm a runner. I can't take stuff like that. And I'll tell you, I went right back to California and I said, this time it's going to be different. And I believe that. I said, I'm not going to go into bars anymore. No more married men. That makes me feel terribly guilty. No more of this. I have my little rules, you know. So instead of going to bars, again, I worked in Century City. I went to Beverly Hills to this lovely, worked in the stock market. It closed at 12:30 in those days. And so I just went over to some classy little Beverly Hills place in the dining room. I didn't go in the bar. And then I'd sit there all day. And all night. They even asked me to move by their vacuum sometimes before their dinner crowd. And I'll tell you, and again, one humiliating thing after another. One night, I'm on the floor. Come out of a blackout, you're on the floor. What are you going to do? You know, so it's like in this lovely restaurant, and people are just looking at you like, you disgusting, drunken broad. And you just want to flip them off. You know, it's that thing of like, do you think I'm down here on purpose? You know, it's not, you know, or they'd look at you like, get up. Well, that's cute. You know, it's a, you know intuitively you're down there because you can't stand, you know, so it's like, oh, I tell you. But what do? I make fun of them, of course. You know, I don't look at me and whatnot and so on and so forth. So anyway, the last year I had to start staying home. I got in auto wreck after auto wreck and stopped by the police. I gained about 30. I'd always been under 100 pounds, and all of a sudden I'm like gaining 30, 40 pounds. I don't eat much. It's just alcoholic bloat. One day at work, someone said, hey, watch this. And they said, hey, Pat. And someone goes to hand me a sheet of paper. And when I went to get it, my hand went, and they all bust out laughing. Let's watch the drunk shake. And there were several things like that. And you pretend like you don't know what they're laughing at. You go, what? What? You know, and you know damn well what they're laughing at and whatnot. I'd walk in the morning. They go, look at you. What happened to you? And I go, party time, Manhattan Beach. I hadn't been at a party in a long time. I was home, drinking my brains out, crying. Me and Peggy Lee, is that all there is? Is that all there is? Oh, God. And then you wake up, these things would happen. I woke up, it's bad enough every morning, you got to look in that mirror. It was awful, but it was that thing. I woke up, my teeth are all chipped. Oh, what happened? My back was all scraped another time. Just stuff like that. It was, oh. I went to the dentist, and that was the first year they started patching, you know, and I went, he said, we could try this. I don't know if it'll last. It lasted long. I patched and filed and did what I just bit into the glass. I mean, after this, I wished I had exciting stories. They were just stupid ass drunken stories. I walked in the living room and there was a bite out of my glass, and I don't know if I was hungry. I have no idea. I have no idea. I can't even make up anything for that one, but it's that. So I, you know, when I went to the dentist, it's so funny because I had them replaced. I call these my Hollywood teeth. They cost a lot of money, these drunken things. My nose broke that in another car wreck. My teeth, my, and I'll tell you, he said at first, well, just do the tops and we'll bleach the bottoms. I think the bottoms will hold up. So he tried bleaching them in the middle too. He said, it's like they're black from within. They're not bleaching. He said, have you ever taken a blow to your lower jaw? I went, could be. We don't know for sure. Anyway, I just stayed home a lot that last year. It was over. It was ugly. It was sad. And then I was invited to this great party with all the peers and all the stock market people and all the whatever. And I'd been so good in 1 month. I'm going to tell you how good I was. No police, no car accidents, phone bills are under 100, which 30-some years ago, that was, hadn't wet my bed or anyone else's. That's always really good. And, I was on a roll. You know, I was better, very definitely better. And so I said, you know what, I'm going to go to that party, but I am going to only have a drink at home before I go and have nothing when I get there. I was so excited. Oh, why hadn't I thought of this before? You know, you're going to have two of these, da-da-da, every hour. And that's what I did. But I had no idea, as an alcoholic, that once I take that first drink, it can set up a phenomenon of craving in me, and I am off to the races. And it was like that more times than not, and it certainly was that night. And I drank my brains out that night. And in a blackout at 3 in the morning with a client in the car and whatnot, going way too fast on Wilshire Boulevard, I hit somebody and threw us both through the windshield, and off we go to UCLA. And I am screaming, turn off that effing siren because we are not dying, you know. And there I am again, under the carpet, have a drink and don't think about it. This is not happening. And whatnot. But I'll tell you, some doctor just grabbed me by the head and stuck a mirror. I wouldn't let anyone touch me. You know, I'm one of those, don't touch me. And he said, for God's sakes, look at yourself. And finally, it's the first time I said out loud, as far as I know, it's my drinking, you know. And I went over to the other gal who was hurt a lot worse than me, and I just begged her not to die. And told her, it's my drinking. I got home the next day. I found out I hit someone else, too. I had no idea who he was or what condition he was in. I was like a crazy person. And I sat there. And again, that moment of clarity came. Another one. You know, except I added on so many things to the story. And I was like, oh. You know, I could just see everything. Alcohol, 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 alcohol. It has just about did me in and people around me now. And I just couldn't drink. But I'll tell you, I didn't want to drink. I had such clarity. And yet that knot in my stomach was so big I couldn't stand it. And I only know one solution for that. And that's alcohol. I don't know any other solution, you know. Maybe like my dad, could have killed myself, I guess. I don't know any other solution. And so I'll tell you, I was like out of my mind. And with all the power that I could muster up, I stayed sober for 2 hours. And I hope I never forget that under my own power, with everything I had, that was my best shot. And I got rip-roaring drunk, and that's when I called Alcoholics Anonymous. Drunk out of my mind. Thank you to all of you who take those ugly 12-step calls from people like me. I don't have too many hot buttons left in AA. The only one I have left I still don't like is when someone says, I don't work with wet drunks, and I just want to slap them because I'll tell you, if you had to have manners to get here, I wouldn't be here. I was drunk as a skunk, and they just talked to me, you know. Well, honey, can you not drink today? I wouldn't be calling you if I could not drink today. You know, it's like, they just say such stupid things. I have to feel my duty to tell them, you know. And just stuff like that. I was out of my mind. But she said, could you try? I do remember that. Could you just try? What are you going to say to that? Do you know I didn't drink the rest of that day? I couldn't believe it. They wanted to get me to a meeting that night, but I wouldn't go. And so I went the next morning. I was still covered with blood. It was a mess. I had two black eyes, bandages everywhere. I was such a mess. So the next day, they picked me up for the meeting. And I'm like, this guy takes one look at me. Him and his wife picked me up, and he goes, oh, he takes me. I'm a mess. He goes, oh, good, she's all beat up. They're more willing that way. Just like, oh, just can't even imagine. And I'll tell you, I never planned to stay. That was that thing when I thought of how low can you go. I couldn't believe I was in here. And yet I stayed. And I think I'll just stay until I get this accident stuff cleared up. And then I'll just stay until this happens. And I'll just stay till that happens and whatnot. I was such a snob. I'll tell you, I kept saying, I'm not that bad. I am not that bad. And that was my thing. I am not that bad. And we had quite a group. We had all kinds of people in our group. And one night, people were talking about, well, you know, their little prostitute days, their hooker days. And I'm going, oh, there's hookers in our group. Oh. And someone's like, oh, I got $100 once, and I got, you know, whatever. And I said, I have never taken money. And my sponsor said, boy, were you stupid. You just gave it away. Oh, you just like, I couldn't win no matter what I did. I just like, I'll tell you. And I'll tell you, I was so grateful that I was in a very, very active group like this, because we did so many 12-step calls. We did help others. There was someone always moving. There were people involved, because I'll tell you, it took me a long time to find a power greater than myself. I did not have the open mind it talks about that's necessary. I had kind of an attitude, well, I'll try it, and that door shut pretty quickly. But I didn't want to drink. And so on my own, and I'd done kind of a shabby job with this. I was not fearless and thorough with those steps, let's put it that way. But you know what? I think I probably did the best I could at the time. And as long as I stuck close to you people and hung in there, I'll tell you, finally the day came, you know, when I was able to work those steps and move on. But again, I don't know. Matter of fact, I even said to my sponsor, now these people did everything for me, and I said, I think I'll go up to Brentwood where there's a better class of people. My sponsor said, honey, we don't know why you were dumped on us either, she said. But just for once in your life, would you leave it alone? You're not drinking, are you? Isn't this the first time in your life that's ever happened? And it took me a minute. I was dumped into this group. They 12-stepped me. They took care of me. And it's the first time in my life I wasn't drinking. It was just amazing to me that, you know, it was, I said, but I don't even know who I am. She goes, your name's Pat, you're an alcoholic, that's all you need to know. It was like, I'll tell you, she was the most wonderful woman. At that time there were only 8:30 meetings, and I got off work at 12:30. I lived alone, and I had a craving to drink for more than a year. And she said, I don't drive, I don't work, I'm always home, and you come here every day. And she did that with several people. And I was over there almost every day. She's the most wonderful example of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever known. Spending time with another alcoholic until we can catch on this thing, you know, whatnot. But being the little sneak I am and being the little self-will run riot, I just lied to her, kept things from her and whatnot, and viciously told her off when I was about 3 years sober and went on to sponsor myself for the next 3 years. And what a mess I made, boy. That was another thing I used to say. I'm working on myself. They go, quit working on yourself. Look at the mess you made already. You know, they said, you work on these steps. They will change you. You know, quit trying to change yourself. And it was kind of a very ugly scene and whatnot. And we moved to Tucson, and we moved way down to the border, and there were three women in AA, and I couldn't get along with two of them. You know, I had no idea that you take yourself away. I heard that thing, and I saw it drunk, but I got to see it was the same thing sober. You take yourself with you and whatnot, and finally, I got so close to drinking, and I'll tell you, it scared me. That knot was back, that hole. See, I had that attitude of, I'll never drink again. What are you, crazy? I am a screaming alcoholic, and I know it. But I finally got to that experience of, I needed relief. And that's why they say an alcoholic's got to work those steps. Or you will find relief the only other way we know how. And so I asked this guy, Mr. A&A, you know the kind? I just go, oh, please spare us, you know. But isn't it funny when you're in trouble? This is the guy I went to. And I said, do you know what's wrong with me? And what? And I'm crying. I'm hysterical. He goes, what's wrong with you? You're the most selfish, self-centered son of a gun I've seen around here in a long time. He said, you know all the words, but it's so apparent how you live. You don't have a clue. The rest of us have to do this stuff because our life depends on it. You don't seem to get that. You hurt people. You step on them. You talk about them. You do everything that just the opposite. You know, and I'll tell you, it's one of those you stand at the turning point, and yet I knew. He said many other things, that personal things that he knew about me and witnessed and whatnot. And so I begged that guy to help me. I just begged him to help me. And I went through those steps like my life depended on it. And today I know very much depend on it. I went and made amends. I made amends to that wonderful sponsor. And she became my sponsor again. And I had many, many wonderful years with her till she just died 4 years ago and whatnot. And made amends. My marriage was falling apart. Oh, my God, I destroyed my marriage. It was just terrible. I went over there once going, Luther did this and Luther did that and Luther did this. And he goes, if you want to talk about Luther, you can go home. If you want to talk about why you're so screwed up over what Luther's doing, we can talk. Which is it going to be? Oh, another turning point. You just want to go, I don't have to take this, you know. But you know what? I heard that. I've been hearing stay on your own side of the street. Cute little saying, isn't it? But I didn't know what it meant. I never practiced that. And so I got to, like, learn that day and whatnot. And my husband and I decided we would split up. We were getting a divorce. So I went over to this guy, helped me through the steps, and I said, we're going to get a divorce, and I'm going to go home to mother. He goes, would you leave that poor woman alone? Look at you, depressed, penniless, you're a mess. And that poor woman's been through Lord knows what else with alcoholics, you know, for God. And what about all the bills you have and all the crap in your house? And what, are you going to dump all that on your husband? Well, yes, as a matter of fact. So, you know, so I had to get a job. I couldn't get a job. I hadn't worked for a few years. And, God, it was real, real tough. Like those, remember the interest rates were like 18% and the want ads were like two columns. It was terrible. And a gal in AA said, I clean houses and I'll be happy to show you how. And when I took my third step, I said, I will do whatever you put in front of me to do. I'm tired of running my own life. It doesn't work. And she taught me how to do that. And I couldn't quite get a clientele, so I went to work for a company. Now, this is the hotshot Wall Street trader. This works for $3.50 an hour. I had to shampoo carpets and clean ovens in between, in between tenants. And I'm working those steps, and I'm making my amends. My marriage is over, and I don't have any friends. I mean, at that time, I was just, like I said, I was such a snob. I don't have too many friends in AA when you act like I did. But I'm going to my meetings, and I'm doing stuff. And in my head, all my life, including up to that moment, I'd said, when that house sell, we put the house up for sale, and we said, as soon as it sells, we're both splitting up, and that's the end of it. So we made up our mind, and it was that thing of when the house sells, it'll be all right. When I get rid of him, it's going to be all right. When I get a better job, it's going to be all right. All my life, it's like, if only this would happen, then I'd be all right, you know? And I remember I'm walking home from this job. I'm exhausted. It's about 105. I had to sell my car so we didn't lose our house just to make that last payment. I am like, things are tough. It is lonely. And I start smiling because I had cut out a 20-cent Der Wiener Schnitzel coupon out of the paper that week, and I had lunch out. And I remember, and I'm giggling on the way home going, whoa, lunch out, first time in about 6 months. And I'm laughing at myself, and I'm walking. And then I stopped, and I thought, how can I be laughing? You know, I hadn't laughed in a while, a long while, so I noticed it. And I thought, the knot's gone. When did the knot go? That awful hole and knot. And it, because it'd been there for months and months and months and all through working those steps. And when did that go, you know? And then all of a sudden, that line in the book came to me, that thing of burn the idea into every new man that you can get better and have a good life regardless of the circumstances. And I'll tell you, my eyes just filled up with tears. It was one of my best spiritual moments where I said, this is what they meant. My sponsor, I'd be always, it's going to be all right. She'd say, honey, it's all right right now. You just don't know it yet. And that's what she meant, that it was all right. And those steps had given me that relief and started sewing up some of those holes and some of the amends I made and some of the stuff, just trying to act like a decent human being and treat people and whatnot. And so I made amends to my husband, and the house sold a few months later. But somewhere in there, I'm trying to do the 11th step, and I'm coming in the morning. Now, we don't talk. I mean, we treat each other respectfully, like, you know, are you going to the Thursday night meeting? Do you need a ride? Or, you know, are you coming? Yeah, that's it. We do not communicate. and we're waiting for the house to sell so we can separate. And I'm pouring coffee, and you know how you ask for the right thought or action, and ask for the right, and I'm trying to work this 11th step, all that stuff into my daily life, you know, and I'm pouring this coffee, and the thought came, ask him if he wants a cup of coffee. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know. You kind of look up there and go, send another one, you know. Not doing that, you know. And I had a friend, Susie. I hope you all have a friend like this. She used to say to me a lot when I go, I'm not doing this, or I'm not making that amend, or I'm not going to go early, whatever it was. I just had my little pablum fits, you know, and I'd be, I'm not going to do this. She'd say, are you going to work this thing or aren't you? And she'd always get my attention, you know. We don't just throw our pablum on the floor. And I mean, are you going to take this program serious and try and apply it to your life or aren't you? And I'll tell you, I heard her say that. And my voice is shaking, and I asked him, would you like a cup of coffee? You know, he just about fell off his chair. And I'll tell you, it started a communication. And when the house sold a few months later, we were treating each other pretty decently. And we said, who knows where this will go, but would you like to rent a place and try it a year? And that's what we did. And so, and like I said, we just celebrated our 30 years. And we've had our ups and downs, that's for sure. But I'll tell you, I have never... ever, I think between him and my sponsor were the biggest examples of working through. I've never worked through anything. I just draw a line through your name. Always. Did it in sobriety, did it drunk, done it all my life. You do something, I don't even care if you didn't, you know, if it's whatever, who's right or who's wrong. That line goes through your name and that's it. And I got to work through those relationships, and I think that's why they're pretty, both got to be really strong, because that was just something I never did. And so we moved back to L.A. about 20 years ago then, and went on and had a good life there, and with all its ups and downs. I went, my mother lived in Florida, and I went down to visit her one day, and in the morning, my little brother walked in, which, whoa, he did not expect me to be there. He's lived on the streets a lot. He's a very, very bad drunk and a drug addict, and you know, he was so gorgeous, big guy. He was skinny and hunched over, his teeth are all rotted, and the druggy eyes, and gave me a hug, reeked of alcohol. Hi, sis, you're my favorite, I know, you know, and that was it. He goes, I gotta go out for a while, I'll see you later. He always said that, he never came back, never, you know, he was too embarrassed, he could hardly look me in the eye, and so I got a call that night from the hospital, said he's been hit by a car, he's not responding. And my mother and I just looked at each other, oh, he got hit by a car again, you know. Oh, well, and I'll go, don't you worry. And when I got there, it's just one of those things you just never expect, you know. They sit you down and say, I'm sorry, he's gone. And it was just, you know, all the years of joking, boy, am I going to come into the money when he gets sober and makes his amends. Boy, am I going to, whatever, and we're saving him a seed, and all those wonderful things. And then someone would say in a meeting, God answered my prayers and got my boy sober. And I'd get real mad and go, well, God damn it, why didn't he answer my prayers, you know? And I had a hard time with that. I had a hard time of going, wait a minute, you know? Wait a minute, I don't think God's up there going, you get to get drunk, you get to get sober. I mean, I don't know how it all works. But I had to just step back from it and say, you know what? When I walked in and he was laying on that gurney, do you know that all that druggy, squished-up stuff was gone? It was gone. And he was so beautiful again. And I thought, you know what? He's had a hard life. And he is at peace. I can see it. And that's just where, you know, that could have been just much of a blessing. And I just had to leave it alone. I love to laugh. I love to have fun. I just love life. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know it's a killer disease. Like I said, I just try to take good care of this thing and carry the message, because it will get us one way or the other. That's for sure. But life is good, and I hope I am one of those that can stay for the long haul here. I still go to at least 3 meetings a week. I sponsor a bunch of people. I volunteer. Don't you love this? So I retired 2 years ago. You would think I would have learned this by now. Oh, when I retire, it'll be different. I won't have any problems. You know, I don't know, or I fell into that trap, but I did. Well, I mean, I've never been with my husband 24 hours around the clock. He is so noisy and like, oh my God, it's like he made me crazy. And so, and anyway, all this stuff and boom, and you're getting used to new meetings. We moved at the same time, you know, to the desert, and oh my God, they're doing it different. Don't they know you don't do it that way? You know, the usual stuff. So I'm like getting a little agita and whatnot, and I'm going, I want to go do volunteer work at some home like my mother was in for a while and whatnot. So I'm trying, and they won't take you, a lot of these small homes, because they can't afford the insurance like they used to. I mean, the day and age we live in, you know. And I'm, like, trying to volunteer. In the meantime, they're announcing at every meeting, central office needs phone people. Oh, no, I don't. See, it's like, I have a plan, and I'm going to go volunteer over here. And it took me, like, a month, and I kept going, please, God, you know, I got to get out of my, I've been sober long enough to know I'm not doing too good, and I got to get out of myself, you know, and, like, help me, one of these places open up for me. Meantime, every meeting, central office needs phone people, you know, it's like, so I'm like, oh, God, I'll tell you, I'll never forget the day that light went on. I'm like, oh, you are so stupid. So it just, oh. So I've been answering phones at central office for a couple of years now. And then in the meantime, I have a tad bit of insomnia. So it's like 2 a.m. and one of those community things go, the stroke center wants volunteers. And I'm going, oh, it's perfect. But I see it's in Palm Springs, and I'm in Palm Desert. It's 20 minutes away. In my mind, I'm from L.A. I mean, hello, and I'm going, oh, my God, all the way to Palm Springs. I go, stop it, just go. And then I go, and I'm not going to set my alarm, so it better not be mornings, and it's not going to be Mondays, because God forbid, you know, the people have a lot of company. And I go down there with all my, I'm not gonna, and I get there, and she said, oh, I'm so grateful you're here. She said, we're so desperate. These people are all, it's like a day program, and this is when their insurance runs out. They're not charged a dime. Everybody, they help themselves, and volunteers help them. They have just a few staff people. It's the only program like it in the United States. It's so wonderful. She got me so excited. And she goes, now, when can you come? And out of my mouth said, when do you need me? Mondays at 8:30. I said, I'll be there. And I love it there. I love it. So it just goes to show that this stuff, you know, it's life. Up and down. Some days are better than others. But, you know, I got solutions today. I had none before. I have tools. I have direction. I have people. I'll get off the track here and there and whatnot. And I have friends like Susie and says, you going to get back on and do this thing, or aren't you? So I thank you all for all your help, and again for having me over. You're a great group. Thanks.